Blog Talk Radio.
Tony, I should reach the voicemail. When you hear the beep, do what you gotta do.
Folks, this is Rambler Rouse and Rich Bergeron, and trying to get in touch there with Tony. Looks like he's out of range for the moment. Keep trying him back here. Tom, we got you on the line?
I'm here, Rich.
All right. Well, might as well start with UFC. They had some big fights over the weekend here, Friday and Saturday.
Hey, Rich, Tony. I can reach the voice now.
Big UFC 147 fight being Rich Franklin and Wanderlei Silva. And in the main event on Friday was Gray Maynard versus Clay Guida. And I was kind of surprised. I actually thought Clay Guida won that fight.
Really?
I was not impressed, but I thought he scored more punches. And actually, the punch stat numbers kind of showed me otherwise, but I really thought he was using the better strategy as far as not getting hit and scoring more shots. And, you know, there was a reason Maynard was so frustrated, because he couldn't hit him half the time.
Well, what I found fascinating was how the crowd was shifting. You know, by the time we got to the third round, the boos were starting to cascade. And afterwards, I don't know if you caught much of some of the internet talk, but Gray definitely picked up a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And with Guida, I mean, I understand he didn't want to stand and go toe-to-toe with him. But, you know, Rich, as we've said before, the bottom line, this is an entertainment business. It's not a potato sack race, you know.
Right.
And it got to the point, I have to think, that Clay, after the third round, maybe, let's revise the tactics. But it seemed like he had a strategy and he was going to stick with it regardless. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was primarily, you know, stick the jab and move.
Yeah.
But,
go ahead.
He really was doing better with it in the first round than any other round, I think, because he gave Maynard a real red nose right away and landing a lot of jabs, and then it kind of turned against him, I guess, because he was running more than he was hitting in the later rounds.
Yeah. I think the first round definitely he had that one. It seemed like with my nose, I had, you know, Gray just maybe biding his time. But, you know, when I watched it again, I thought, well, maybe Gray didn't have much choice. I mean, Guida's movement was just incredible. I thought Gray picked it up a bit in the second round. Landed. I had him slightly ahead there. But, you know, it was one of those kind of fights that it was just close enough that you could see it, you know, you close enough to really, you know, be where it was, a split decision.
Right.
But I think by the third round, that's when things really started to change. And, you know, the crowd just, and you know, I don't know, Gray had never really connected a lot with the crowds. You know, with the fans some, but, you know, I don't know if it was a style situation, or, you know, he's kind of a low-key fellow. As I said, I've met him in person, and he's, you know, very, you know, doesn't really talk a ton of trash or anything. And he had, and then back in New Jersey, of course, with the Frankie Edgar trilogy still in people's mind, but he really seemed to be winning the crowd over.
Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of interesting for me to see the big swollen black eye on Clay Guida after the fight, because I didn't see that many punches land, and I was kind of surprised that he was that badly beaten up from it. But,
I think the fourth round had to be a classic, you know, where you know, Gray was finally just, you know, he was doing the talking and threw his hands up, you know, more or less said, come on, hit me. And then Clay took the bait, and that really turned things around quite a bit. And, you know, it was funny, on the Underground, apparently the phrase 209 is a verb now, thanks to the Diaz brothers. So they were requesting a GIF of Gray going 209. I found that kind of interesting, too. You know?
Right.
And also, it seemed like there was a little extracurricular stuff as they were leaving the cage, if you noticed that. There seemed to be some talk going on there.
I didn't notice it during the fight, but apparently there was some double middle fingers thrown up.
As the talk was going, all of a sudden we seen a few of the seconds kind of get that body language thing, like, you know, here we go. And this is just to say we're both leaving. So the next time I'm out in Las Vegas for a real MMA event, you know, with our amateur league there, if Gray's there, I'm going to have to get it right from the horse's mouth, just what, you know, just what was said.
And definitely one of those fights that wasn't very entertaining for a main event, but it was kind of explained away by Guida as, you know, that was the strategy that they came up with for me, and I thought I executed it well. And he also mentioned some things about health and, you know, the health of a fighter over a period of his career. And, you know, the object should be, I mean, not to get hit. That's for your own personal safety. That should be your object as a fighter.
Well, again, how many times in boxing have we heard the phrase, well, we don't know what the guy's chin's like, and then a good trainer will say, well, good, we hope we never find out what the guy's chin's like.
Yeah.
But, again, the problem is we've got that fine line there that we want fighter safety, but we also want the excitement. And that style he was showing just was not, well, it sure didn't win him too many fans, and it seemed like it still hasn't calmed down yet. I was just doing a little looking around today, and there's still some complaining. And, you know, a fascinating thing, Rich, is Greg Jackson seemed to catch a lot of the flack for this. You know, it wasn't just Guida. It was like, well, you know, because maybe a little hangover from the Condit Nick Diaz fight. Or kind of use some pretty smart movement there. But the thing we're forgetting is you look at the opening fight with Cub Swanson and Ross Pearson. I mean, Cub Swanson, you know, it wasn't like he just came to throw pitter-patter punches, did he?
No. I've seen him on the bad end of a knockout, but and I haven't seen him dominate like this in a long time. And he took a guy that's really well known over in the UK. He's been on The Ultimate Fighter, and just ruined him.
Yeah, and yeah, Pearson's definitely not a cheap date. And I just thought that Pearson just did not seem to have the lateral movement to cut him off. And Cub just really, you know, he was just, you just can't plod forward. And if, you know, if guy's moving like that, and Pearson just didn't seem to, you know, he just wasn't, you know, but I don't think it was necessarily Pearson being bad. It was just Cub's movement was just so good.
All right. We had Brian Ebersole had a unanimous decision win over T.J. Wahlberger. It's just an unconventional style Ebersole has, and Wahlberger didn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah, like I noticed in that one, like with my notes, that Ebersole really seemed confident at the end of that second round, like he had withstood TJ's best, you know, because TJ really was trying to crank some submissions. And I think the key word here with Ebersole is experience.
Right.
You know, the guy's 31 going on 50, I think, you know, it's one of those things, you know, just had so many fights, and it just seemed like in that second round, I thought that it was close enough to give TJ the round, but you know that cliche, you can lose the battle but win the war, and I think that kind of summed that up. So I really have no quarrel with that decision. And moving on to Stout and Fisher, what's your comments there?
Well, that was a good example of boxing and MMA. And, these two guys have some experience against each other, and they came into this fight not wanting to disappoint. And they didn't really probably live up to their previous two fights, but they definitely went to war, especially in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought Stout was just the better boxer, I mean, hands down. No pun intended. He just landed more shots. He seemed sharper. He seemed like Spencer was really just loading up on the right and just waiting to land that right hand, and he didn't always have it, and Stout had a much better head movement and footwork and just better hands.
And if you don't remember from the third round, I think that Stout looked pretty good on the ground, too. I had him having a slight edge with the takedowns in the grappling game, too. So, I mean, the second round could have been close, but I really have no quarrel with this unanimous decision there for Stout either. So,
right. So
that's that. And then, so now we'll see what's next for Gray Maynard.
Yeah. I mean, he keeps talking about wanting another rematch with Frankie Edgar. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I guess you can't go wrong with that.
Well,
they've had such great fights. The last one wasn't as good, but, you know, who could forget the one where Edgar came back from taking his worst.
Yeah, probably that was...
Never been to get knocked out.
Yeah, that was, to me, that was like a Rocky movie. I mean, you don't see that too often. I mean, you know how this goes. There's nothing scripted in there. There's no choreographer. I mean, when your bell's rung, it's very unusual to see that. But as far as Maynard, I don't know if he's earned his title shot or anything, but he's definitely redeemed himself, and I think that he did prove his cardio also. Because that was, that was a big question here, because we know that Gweed is like the ever-ready bunny. I mean, if these things were 15 rounds instead of five, you know, I think Gweed would still be going. I mean, it's just incredible. And so I don't know. I don't know if Maynard would be pulling for Edgar to beat Benson. You know, this is that's an interesting thing, because if assuming Benson successfully defends against Edgar, then I would assume that Nate Diaz would be next on the line.
Right.
Do you agree?
I thought it was very weird to see that Edgar even got that rematch with Henderson, because he really, that was a one-sided fight. You know, it wasn't at all like the Maynard fights. So for him to get that immediate rematch, I thought that was kind of crazy. Granted, the guy had the title for a while, but you kind of got to earn your way up a couple more rungs before you get back in the title picture, usually.
I would agree. Yeah. The only thing I can think that if Joseph was thinking, well, maybe Edgar has shown that he's much better the second time around.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, and... But, I was kind of taken aback by it, too. But this is such a huge fight for Edgar. You know, you don't want to lose twice.
And, of course, UFC 147 is on Saturday. We had Silva versus Franklin, too. That fight, I really didn't find that entertaining. You know, it was one round with a lot of action, and Silva was actually one that was rampaging in that round, and could have been stopped. I mean, it was close, very close to being stopped. And Franklin actually said in the fifth round that I didn't remember anything after the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, oh, this is round five. That was my first memory. So he definitely had his bell ring. And he fought all right, you know, but it was just so basic, you know, like watching those two guys. It seemed like really you were watching the early days of MMA almost, or you know, a kind of stale version of MMA, because it just wasn't really that dynamic of a fight at all, and you know, very rarely went to the ground, and Rich is pretty much bread and butter, 1-2 punch, and that's it. I mean, he threw some hooks in there and stuff like that, but he pretty much just boxed it out with Silva. Silva didn't really look that aggressive except for that one round. And actually, Dana White made a good point, because he had mentioned that they didn't market a 10-8 round when Franklin got his bell rung, which would have changed the outcome, possibly. So
yeah, I would agree. That's the kind of round that if you're not going to go 10-8 there, when are you?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, I don't know, sometimes you just got to wonder what the judges were seeing. But my take on the whole thing, I mean, I'm a huge fan of both guys. I mean, considering what they've done for us throughout the years, you know, the entertainment they've given us. But strategically, how important was this? Because you do get the feeling that both these guys are quite a ways away from a title shot, wouldn't you think?
Right. Well, Rich Franklin's already asking for one. This is kind of think it's a little pretentious, but it's what he wants to go out there and say. I mean, he's obviously getting close to retirement. He wants that one more big fight. We have a lot of guys that are kind of in that territory. Tito Ortiz comes to mind. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't. I haven't seen Stefan Bonner in a while, but I would think he's one of them. He's been around a while. Kenny Florian just retired. You know, a lot of these legends, you know, Wanderlei being one of them, Dana White kind of hinted that even if he does retire, he'll be with the UFC for a long time. So,
yeah.
You know, we talked about, you know, what happens after this fight last week, and, you know, who loses and what do they do. And Silva definitely has some fallback plans with his gym, and, you know, definitely a home base in Las Vegas there that would make it convenient for him to work with the UFC on a regular basis as a, you know, real brand ambassador.
Oh yeah, and he has quite a few fighters there. In fact, on when I was out there in May, he had on our card, I think we had four different guys that were training at his gym. So he's got it going pretty good, that's for sure. But now, as far as Franklin, though, assuming. And I hate to start talking about Sonnen and Silva a bit early, but I can't help it. You know, I don't have to justify myself. Come on, you know. But assuming that Sonnen could pull off the upset, Sonnen and Franklin, what do you think?
Yeah, that might be a good fight. I think Sonnen would win that one, but I'd be rooting for Franklin.
You know, Sonnen, it's
interesting
just,
to see what it's like for Sonnen to come in at normal level. And I think there's going to be a big difference in his performance this time. And what's really been making waves is the way Anderson Silva came out and said on the conference call this week that he wants to break all of his teeth and every bone in his body. And laid back and composed during the whole thing.
Yeah, I've never. Well, you remember after the was it after the Bisping fight when Sonnen was calling him out, and Anderson kind of had that almost like a kid's smile, you know? It was which I thought was funny, especially considering the fact what Sonnen had just said about his wife a few days before.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe this is, but again, with this trash talk, you know, I don't know if you caught Inside MMA, but Rogan was giving some examples of trash talk, and you know how you try to throw someone off their game, and maybe Sonnen's onto something here. I don't know, because I mean, to me it seems like when Silva is just relaxed, like you'll notice he'll go out and sometimes he'll start kind of slow, and there'll be the feel out process, and then when he starts that kind of shimmy movement, that's very bad for the opponent. Because then I think he's got his timing, he's got his feel, and I guess where I'm going with this is he's not the kind of guy that usually fights out of anger.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, Sonnen's taking one heck of a chance here, but maybe he's thinking, I need to get him out of that rhythm. Of course, maybe Sonnen, when the fight starts, Sonnen has a way of getting guys out of the rhythm by just bum-rushing him and getting him down. I mean, he's one-note Johnny, but he's so good at it, everyone knows what he's going to do, and yet he still does it.
Right. So, well, he definitely has a well-rounded game, and actually it was kind of interesting. Before their first fight, I had Matt Lindland on the show, and Lindland has gone way back with Silva since like day one, I think when they were like 15, they were training together. And he was telling me that, you know, you're going to be surprised. He is going to whip Silva's ass. Nobody expected him to the first time around, and he really did until he got submitted. But
and on the feet, I mean, that's what, from that first fight, I still could not believe what I was seeing. I mean, because you know he'd never shown that before, and that's really never been his, you know, much of his thing. But you know what his plan is: just get in, charge forward, get you down, control you, and just pound you out. You know, and it's always. He kind of reminds me of the old Green Bay Packers power sweep, you know, or San Francisco 49ers, Joe Montana's short passes. You know what's coming. And their attitude, okay, you know it's coming. Stop it if you can. So this is going to be intriguing.
I think it's going to be a little closer this time. I think Anderson Silva is going to be better prepared. I think Chael Sonnen is just so motivated for this fight. He's almost in the zone already. I think that's why he hasn't really been flipping out as much as Anderson has, because, I mean, he's already done all the trash talking, and he's achieved his goal, which was to get Anderson Silva to flip out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But everybody that pushes buttons is aiming to do, you know, is to get under the other guy's skin and get him to act differently than he's supposed to. So I think Chael now is already going in thinking, well, I've intimidated this guy, I've made him, you know, pushed him off his pedestal a little bit, and made him respond. And coincidentally, you know, the connection to UFC 147 being in Brazil, there were some nasty pictures all over the stadium, and Joe Rogan even mentioned it and said he couldn't show it to the viewers.
Because
it was so graphic.
Yeah.
And I saw one of the pictures, and it was like... I think Silva was on bottom and Chael was on top, and the big UFC belt was covering over them, so it looked like they were both naked. Like Silva was screwing him up the ass. So that's definitely, you know, something that Chael Sonnen not only pissed off Anderson Silva, he pissed off the whole country of Brazil.
Well, so, you know, I mean, I can kind of put myself in their shoes. I mean, he did... He ain't been shy, okay, you know, but going back to their first fight, and you remember Anderson's explanation for this when Sonnen was saying that what a black belt from the Nogueira brothers is like, what did he say, like something you'd get in a Happy Meal? Was it it was either a Cracker Jack box or Cracker Jacks, who eats them anymore, but I mean, the kind of thing that you get at McDonald's in a Happy Meal. So supposedly Anderson said, I'm not going to stand, I'm going to beat him with jiu-jitsu. I don't know. I mean, he'd have to be awful patient to take a beating for 23 and a half minutes. What was it? How long was the last round? Did it go 4 minutes? Do you remember, Rich? I can't think now, but I know it,
yeah.
I know it went at least three.
4 minutes.
Yeah, so that would be Anderson's explanation for the fight being that competitive. Of course, along with the little chemical warfare there too. So I guess that's what makes this just so intriguing.
Yeah, it was 3:10 into the the round. It was at the 3:10.
Ah, okay.
They stopped it, so.
Yeah. But I mean, well, I
had the arm bar submission, but I thought it was just a triangle. So
yeah.
It was like me. That's what Sherdog is trying to tell me.
But I mean, just right up until that time, I think you'd be hard pressed to give Anderson a minute, let alone a round.
Right.
You know, it was an incredible performance. So, you know how much of this stuff is mental, and we'll just see if Anderson's shrugged that off. And in his mind, he's saying, well, it was a strategic mistake. I should have just stayed with my strong point and just pounded, you know, stuffed his takedowns and pounded him. So it'll be fascinating to see if he can stuff his takedowns this time.
It's definitely going to be a different fight, you know, whether Chael's going to be ready for anything that Anderson has this time around, I don't know, but there has been rumors, too, that Anderson's suffering from a bad knee, and there's talk even a couple weeks ago that they were going to cancel the fight because of it, and obviously they haven't, but, you know, if he's coming into this fight a little bit banged up, because of that knee, and the knee is like the worst thing in a fight to have be a problem, because
exactly. I mean, that's
the way
that
the leg kick.
Yeah.
Just on the feet, a couple kicks, just bad knee, and you're not going to be a happy camper in there. So look out for that, I guess. See if that's a factor. But there's also a nice co-main event there: Forrest Griffin versus Tito Ortiz. It's just talking about Tito. And if he loses this one, he's definitely out of the UFC. Forrest Griffin, I mean, he could stick around forever. I don't think they'd ever throw him out. He's just such an icon. But Tito is definitely, had some bad blood with Dana, on again, off again, good friends. And we'll see. But I think he's actually said that this is his last fight. He just wanted one more, so unless he has a real decisive victory, I don't think we're going to see him around much longer. And Forrest Griffin, actually, he's one of those guys that he's already kind of out of the sport. He doesn't really like fighting anymore, from what I hear. He just basically does it for the money. I mean, he's not too proud to admit that either.
And that's not necessarily conducive to success or good health. You know,
right.
I mean, who am I to give him advice? But, you know, this is, and as far as Tito, I mean, I think that he does seem serious. He was also on Inside MMA, and they went up to his Big Bear setup that he bought from Oscar De La Hoya. And he was talking about his training, and they were showing the facilities and all that. But he has said this is going to be it. But, Rich, how many times have we heard guys say that?
Yeah, we just heard Fedor say it.
Yeah.
I think we missed that one. Or did we? I don't know. Maybe we did. But, Fedor quit. Actually, I think he quit Thursday night, so we couldn't have talked
right.
about it last
right.
night.
After the Pedro Hizo fight. Huh.
And I kind of laugh when I see everybody calling him the greatest. And, you know, he might have been great during his Pride days, but, you know, he didn't fight half the big names that were out there at the time, and especially afterwards. I mean, the first big names he fought, he lost to. I mean, he really struggled against Brett Rogers, could have lost to Brett Rogers.
Right. See, well, you remember Arlovsky was making it pretty interesting for him, too, in the fight before that.
Yeah, he was bringing it out with a couple shots.
Yeah, so I think he was starting to slip a bit then. And then with Brent Rogers, that was a fight.
That's a miracle right hand that ended that one.
Yeah, but the whole point is the Fedor of 2003 or 2004, you would think theoretically would not have struggled that much. And that's no disrespect to Brent Rogers. He's a big, dangerous opponent, but he didn't have the experience, you know, for the fight to be what it was, I thought.
He might have been the greatest if he managed to get the light heavyweight and fight light heavyweight, but it just wasn't a naturally built heavyweight.
Yeah, he was kind of in that no man's land, you know, because, well, what did he go in and use, 225 maybe or something?
Usually, or less.
Yeah, 220, 225, which, going back...
Never had great physique at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of, like Tim Sylvia.
Yeah.
See Tim Sylvia going in there for a lot of his fights. But he wants to spend time with his kids, and you know, I'd say let him retire. Don't make up all these stupid conversations about, you know, still wanting him in the UFC. Yeah, I read one of these articles this week from, you know, somebody that writes exclusively about the UFC. And it's all speculation about whether there could be a Brock Lesnar versus Fedor match in the UFC. You know, it's stupid to even suggest that to begin with, but then to go in the UFC. None of those guys have contracts with the UFC. And, you know, there's, I guess, the speculation on Inside MMA when they had Fedor on there and interviewed him, where, you know, they hacked the M1 page and they said that fight was going to happen. So, I mean, it gave an excuse to talk about it. But to write a whole article about, you know, whether this could happen and leave the door open like that, it's just like, you got to be kidding me, you know. Journalists out there that end up in MMA, I don't know. I think they need to pick another sport or something.
Well, how many times after Tyson retired did we keep hearing all these rumors?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and then, of course, after Tyson's last disaster, what the heck was the guy, that big Irish guy, I can't even remember his name now. Well, I guess he didn't set the world on fire. But you remember, after that fight, then the talk was, well, you know Tyson's coming to the UFC. You know he's coming to the UFC. And, you know, do you think he'd have attracted a bit of an audience if he would have? Can you imagine?
Yeah, unbelievable. He loves the UFC. He's a big fan. I've seen Dana White actually wear a Mike Tyson T-shirt in an interview. So they have a mutual respect for each other, I guess. And he's backstage a lot, meeting a lot of the fighters. But, Fedor is not coming out of retirement, and Brock Lesnar is not going to leave the WWE. I mean, yeah, and talk about news. I mean, everybody was speculating who would Brock Lesnar fight if he came back to the UFC. And the news comes out 3 weeks after the meeting that Lesnar had with Dana White that they couldn't have had a worse meeting.
Yeah.
That news should have been something that they were prioritizing before they were thinking about who he's going to fight in the UFC. How did the meeting go? Not just that they met, it's going to happen.
But you know something, though? If that fight could be made, what do you think the pay-per-view buy rate would be? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I really just, I don't even like to speculate because it just makes no sense to me.
But I think it would
destroy him. So I don't even think it would be a fight that people would think would be competitive. But people have this Jones for Fedor.
That's my point.
So I guess a lot of people would buy it just thinking that maybe, you know, he could slay the giant, but entertaining if it ever does materialize.
Yeah, it would just be one of those things. You know, could Fedor recapture the old magic and, you know, expose Lesnar and all this? I could imagine the freak show it could turn into, but I think it would be made if both guys would want to do it.
As a retiree, I don't think Fedor would object to going into the WWE for a spoof match with Brock Lesnar. That way, you'll see it on pay per view. But I think that's the only way.
Yeah, I think that was Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn, their third bout. I just that was done there when it was still the WWF. I think I read, can't remember. Oh boy, yeah. Well, people want entertainment and.
Let's just finish out the UFC 148 card here coming up on July 7th. There's another couple fights I wanted to at least mention here. We got Patrick Cote is coming back to the UFC fighting Kung Lee. Lee's only got a 7-2 record. He's been doing a lot of movie stuff. He's actually been a Strikeforce guy for most of his fights, and just kind of crossed over to the UFC, and Patrick Cote is coming back. He's 17-7, and that should be a pretty decent fight. I think, it was kind of a fluke for Lee to lose to Wanderlei Silva there. I still haven't seen that fight, but I was really surprised when I heard the result when it happened. I didn't expect that because from what I've seen of Kung Lee, especially when he dismantled Frank Shamrock like that, it's just, you know, I've been really impressed. But I thought he was really focusing a lot on the movies at that time and trying to get these bit parts and these different movies and, you know, trying to make a career. And obviously, it must pay better than fighting.
Well, you know, and also in that fight, in the Vanderlei fight, you know, Kung Lee was fighting at home. And I've had some fighters tell me that, you know, you think naturally you'd like that home court advantage, but
right.
that can work against you. And it just looked like Kung Lee may have, and I don't know if it was mental, or, I mean, he did look a little soft, too. Maybe he'd skimped a bit in the training, but maybe it was just a massive adrenaline crash that he had, because if say, you haven't seen it, but if you get the chance, after the first round, he was starting to breathe pretty heavy. And Vanderlei had said afterwards he kind of knew that maybe Kung was starting to wear down, and then Vanderlei really turned it on. So this is going to be a fascinating test. And I've always liked Cote. Now he's been kind of inactive lately, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'll tell you when his last fight was in a second here, but I guess they're saying he never really left the UFC because. You know, I guess his last fight was October 23rd, 2010, against Tom Lawler. That was a loss. That wasn't his last fight, period, but this was his last UFC fight.
Yeah.
And he fought three times in 2011 under different banners. Ringside MMA twice, and then Instinct MMA. He won against Caleb Starnes, Todd Brown, and Crafton Wallace. And two of them were decisions. One was a leg injury, TKO, Crafton Wallace.
Caleb Starnes. Yeah, boy,
there's four times. Sorry, four times. His last fight was March 31st this year. And it was an AFC Amazon Forest Combat 2. and then Gustavo Machado. And it was a round one knockout.
That would be kind of fun to go down to one of those things, you know. I've always just had that wish to do that. I just picture it out in the jungle somewhere. It's probably not, but in my mind,
jungle
it's outdoors. And, yeah, it's outdoors and there's snakes. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's nothing like that at all, but just has that ring to it, you know.
And just to run through this quickly before we get to some boxing, we got Ivan Menjivar, 24-8, fighting Mike Easton, 12-1. We got Chad Mendez, who's 11-1, fighting Cody McKenzie, the guillotine guy from The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
Elvin Guiard, 29-10-2. He's been around forever. He's fighting Fabricio Camus, who's 14-6-1. We got a very token Japanese guy here. We got Dong Hyun Kim, who's 15-1-1, against Demian Maia, who's 15-4. And this should be an interesting fight. Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's 17-0, fighting Gleison Tibau, who's 25-7.
Hmm.
And John Alessio's back. This is another guy who's been around forever. He's 34-15. He's fighting Shane Roller, who's 10-6. He didn't do that well in his last appearance in the Octagon, Alessio, but we'll see what happens this time. And finally, the last two, we got Konstantinos Filippou, 10-2, fighting Ricky Fukuda, who's 18-5, and Rafael Oliveira, 14-5, fighting Yoislandi Izquierdo, who's 6-1. And that's not this Saturday, but next Saturday.
Yeah.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, that Konstantin, I remember in his last fight, he really showed what a good boxer can do with takedown defense.
Right.
And that is a real problem because his last fight, if you're by the computer, you can look to see who he fought, if you could check that. But what I remember about that was his, you know, I think he's out of Matt Serra's camp, that Roy Longo was in the corner with him, and his takedown defense was so good, and he was landing just powerful shots, and that's quite a combination. So I was very impressed with him. I believe that was last January, I think, last winter.
Well, that'll be it.
Yeah, that was, let's see. It was against Court McGee. Unanimous decision win.
Yeah.
Last March. And then last December, he fought Jared Hammond, knocked him out in the first round.
Yeah, he's on his way up. I'm very impressed with him. Cody McKenzie, what's that phrase, idiot savant? I mean, the guy's got that one thing, but again, it's like kind of like Soden with the takedowns. You know, I mean, you know what? You remember on the show, and even in I think did he win his fight? I mean, because I know he won all his fights on the show with the guillotine. But that's one of those things, you know how good the guy is at it, and yet, unbelievably, he was still catching people with it.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, and then pretty much almost every one of his wins from
I just find that amazing. I mean, if I'm cornering his opponent, I'm going to say, okay, now, I want to, you know, head up.
Every one of his wins, other than his first two fights, from guillotine chokes. All in the first round, too, primarily.
And it's just so amazing. I mean, you would think everyone has a pretty good idea of avoiding that. You know, like the early days, you know, like UFC's, you know, when the single-digit ones, guillotines seem more effective, but now you just don't see it as much, which makes McKenzie even more impressive.
Yeah, no, should be a tough matchup for him this time.
I mean, that's one of those Bruce Lee cliches about, I don't fear the man who's done 10,000 things one time. I have more fear for the guy who's done one thing 10,000 times.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah. He embodies that quote. But one other point I wanted to make about UFC 147. Of course, Dana White loves to criticize people, and I think he was a little bit jealous of all the attention those guys down there in Brazil were getting from the Ultimate Fighter, because he got really pissed off about some of the fights in the finals for the Ultimate Fighter in Brazil, where I guess one of the fights he wasn't too disappointed about, but there was. You know, the second fight, he was blasting both guys, and he said a lot of these guys were signing autographs and running around like they already had world title belts and, you know, just hamming it up, and it just kind of drained them for the fight time, which, you know, sounds like something somebody who'd never fought a day in his life would say.
Yeah, I don't get that at all, especially after... You know, what we had the night before. I mean, I don't remember any snooze fest. I mean, and there were some guys. I mean, I don't think we seen any Griffin Bonners, but I mean, there were some pretty good fights. They were going at it pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, Dana White, you can find some better things to criticize. It seems to me like he's created this monster, and. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one that really pushed the Ultimate Fighter, even though he actually wasn't in favor of it in the very beginning before it happened. But once it was just, you know, a juggernaut rolling downhill, he's been promoting the hell out of it. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, like I've mentioned before, these guys go through a hell of a training camp situation. They don't have these fights on their actual records, their exhibitions, and fight, you know, sometimes three times in 3 weeks, so
sure.
Really can't really knock them for getting through that and feeling great about themselves, and taking advantage of being in front of their hometown fans fighting for the UFC, or their home country at least.
And I think it was a great idea to have it down there. I imagine we'll see one over in England eventually.
But, all those guys did well. They represented themselves well. They didn't all put on entertaining fights, per se, but, they definitely did their best to try.
Yeah.
It is what it is. You get a bunch of bunch of guys wanting to maximize their time in there, I guess, in front of their fans.
Yeah.
At least a 15-minute highlight reel. These guys that got their decision. And what did Dana White expect? I mean, you know, the game has evolved from the day when everybody was getting quick knockouts because they had such different styles and one would favor over another.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
Well, that's the evolution of the sport. And
let's try to reconnect here with Tony. Sorry to interrupt there.
All right.
She never misses the show, so phone isn't working or whatever. There he is. What happened?
Yeah. I tried to answer your phone a couple times, and he kept telling me nothing.
All right, well, here he is, folks. Tony the Tornado on the line. All right, well, we're getting you on just in time because we're going to switch gears. We've been talking UFC, primarily MMA there, and we got to talk about boxing. Of course, Josecito Lopez scored an unbelievable upset this week and knocked out Victor Ortiz, technical knockout, broke his jaw.
All that shock on that. I was with Josecito Lopez. He had some good credentials. I knew he would be a tough fight for Victor Ortiz because this was Ortiz's fight, and he's coming off the Mayweather fight where he was knocked out, whether that was a cheap shot or not. And a very respected boxing writer that I follow on Facebook, I'm not going to mention any names here, but he was coming out and questioning if Ortiz is a quitter. And you know, obviously, a broken jaw is a legitimate injury. Some fighters have gone through it. Some fighters have won with it. I know Ali fought with a broken jaw. Against Ken Norton, he did not win that fight. I remember Tommy Morrison had a broken jaw against Joe Hip. It was a very good fight. Morrison came back to win. Other fighters, you know, have, you know, fought and won with, you know, broken jaws. But a lot of times it depends on the severity of it, too. I did not get, you're going to be shocked when you hear this, I did not get to see the Ortiz fight. I did hear about it. And if you go back and watch any of Ortiz's fights, fights with Berto, fights with Marcus Maidana, Floyd Mayweather, the Peterson brother, I think it was Lamont Peterson that he fought, he always fights with his mouth open. You're taught to clench, you know, your jaw the best you can, because the fact that a clenched jaw, you know, keeps it sturdier to absorb a punch. On the same lines, it keeps it from getting knocked off the tendon and broken. Like I said, the severity of the Ortiz break, I remember this kid, like he was walking back to his corner and blood was just pouring out of his mouth. That's a fight that, yes, would have to be stopped. The writer in question was talking about Ortiz as a quitter, because basically he quit in the Maidana fight. In the main of the fight, for that being a quit stop, because he's trying to get himself disqualified out there, and then he got to get knocked out.
You're fading a little. Can you speak up?
Yeah, maybe, I'm sorry. I'm having a little trouble talking tonight. I twinged my back. I really don't know what I did. So I'm in a little bit of pain right now. I'm walking with crutches.
Oh,
no.
Yikes.
But are you going to be prepared for the big shocking news of the week?
Uh-oh. What's that?
I hope all my listeners here are sitting down when they hear this. I went to a graduation party last week.
That's your news of the week?
Nope. That is not the news of the week.
Oh.
It's what I did after the graduation party.
Oh.
Every year when I go to Florida, I go to a little bar called the Tilted Kilt, which was, you know, there was only two or three locations in Florida. I think one was in Tampa and one was in one was in Clearwater, one was in Tampa. I go to the one in Clearwater, and I love their food there. And I love it because it's the Scottish Hooters. And they have all these cute little girls, and they're wearing kilts and knee-high socks, and it's cute. Well, one of them happened to open in the western suburbs of Philadelphia, about 30 minutes from my house in Queen of Prussia. So last week after the graduation party, I went to the Tilted Kilt so I could harass this young girl named Victoria and watch the UFC pay-per-view.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, surprisingly. I think I only saw about 3 minutes of actual fighting there because I was too busy watching Victoria. I do owe Victoria, though, because as we're watching the UFC pay-per-view, and she's like, oh, you just had a ringside hat on. This was the only hat I had that day from this party. Oh, that. She goes, oh, I guess you don't like the UFC. You're more of a boxing guy, right? I'm like, you've got it, Victoria. And then my one friend, he walked away from me. So I needed a favor from her. I said, listen, I said, when this imbecile comes back, I said, he's getting married in a few months. Would you ask him, because he'll say no if I ask, if I can sing Baby Got Back at his wedding? So she asked him, and he said, yeah. I'm going to fucking hold him to it.
Well, speaking of boxing, we talked about celebrity boxing in the past. Speaking of celebrity boxing, too, we didn't talk about last week. Rodney King got killed, or killed himself. We don't know yet, but it's kind of a shady story there behind it. I guess I don't know what happened to him. But there's another celebrity boxing story this week. Chris Brown and rapper Drake are getting offered $1 million to fight each other in the same promotion, celebrity boxing, run by a guy named Damon Feldman.
I know Damon. Damon actually is a Facebook friend of mine. He is actually, Damon had one of the best one-liners of recent memory. I've been to a lot of Damon's fights, and the reason hardcore boxing fans did not like his fight, he tried to make it too much into, like, because Damon also promoted professional wrestling. He tried to make it too much of a spectacle. And anybody who knows me knows I love professional wrestling. But I don't like to intertwine it with boxing. When I go to a boxing match, I want some serious good fights. When I went to his fight, remember we had a Butterbean on the time, and I mentioned about the incident he had in Philadelphia, and he said, yeah, that ring announcer was an asshole or whatever. That was in Damon Feldman card. But Damon Feldman, he specialized in bringing guys like Butterbean on. He had one guy who won a Rocky Balboa lookalike contest 3 years ago, and I met the guy, and he became friends. So he maybe was Rocky Balboa. He walked through the ring with a pork pie hat on and the American flag trunk. And he knocked out a couple bombs in one round, and then he fought a guy that was halfway, not halfway decent, but the guy, you know, had some skills at the fight a little bit. And I scouted the guy for this kid, and I said, listen, I know this guy. I said, you got to do this, 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 and this. He did none of it, and 45 seconds later, he's deposited on his ass. I never talked to him. And I tried to call him after that, and he never called me back, so I guess he thought about it. The game is like, there's always talk about kicking on his cards and everything, and he got in a lot of trouble. And everything with him was always a clusterfuck. Except a few weeks ago, he wrote on Facebook and about the Pacquiao Bradley fight, and he goes, and they accused me of fight fixing. One of the best ones out there. I'm like, Dan, he got it good on that one. But I try to generally avoid, like, when Damien was doing the pro boxing card, and now he's doing a lot of that, like, celebrity boxing stuff. Like, he was having a girl from a local radio station. She was going to do a pillow fight or something with Octo Mom. It was like Jose, because he's the one that put Jose to Jacob on a couple of them, and Jose would get knocked out every time.
He had a big fight with Jose over his brother showing up instead of him in one
car.
So, well, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. I guess it's not really $1 million to be split up between these guys. It's $1 million to charity if they fight each other. So, I don't know. They're going to be fighting each other in court. Chris Brown and Drake there. It's basically, they already had a fight in the nightclub. Brown was, I guess, partying with his friends in the VIP section of the South Village Club, and Drake was near them, and they speculated that the whole thing was about Rihanna. They both dated him. So, but Brown said he was a victim, and Drake's representative said he did not engage in any activity which resulted in injury. But Brown had a nasty gash on his chin, Brown has actually denied that it was about Rihanna. And actually, San Antonio Spurs guard Tony Parker was injured in the scuffle, and Parker is suing the nightclub for $20 million over an eye injury, and he said he suffered that night. So they're fighting in court before they're fighting in the ring, I think. that's dominated the Google boxing alert this week. Everybody wants to talk about that. There's probably been about seven different big articles, and it's probably never going to happen. But another article in the Wall Street Journal, no less, talked about a new device. I don't know if you've heard about this thing. It's called, what is it called? Punch Force. And it's shaped like a piece of bazooka bubble gum. Weighs about 7.9 grams, and HBO developed it. And basically, it's going to measure the speed and force of a boxer's punches and transmit that information instantaneously to viewers of HBO broadcasts. And this is actually the first article to come along since the Manny Pacquiao bad decision there to suggest that something like this could be used to judge better. Even though there's no indication that they're going to approve this for use to have the numbers shared with the judges. And I guess they cite an 80-something percent, 80.5% accuracy when it comes to force, and 86.5% when it comes to speed is the accuracy rate. But, you know, still, it kind of boggles my mind that I haven't heard anybody really give that as a solution to, you know, look at the punch stat numbers that are already in place. That doesn't get to judges. So, you know, the fact that they're not even looking at this for judges when this whole article is toned like, say goodbye to boxing judges. new device is it. But it, you know, kind of disappoints you reading that headline because it says it's not going to be used with judges. We'll see.
The first thing that they can do is, you know, and they did this at a few fight cards, that if something was so absurd, and I believe the Paul Williams Arisara Landy fight was an example here, that everybody thought Landy won the fight. And Williams got the decision, and it was a disgrace. All three of the judges were suspended. You held people accountable, and you told them that they would basically lose their job, their privileges, you know, judging fights for poor performance. Which, if I go to, actually, and I'm going to segue this into something else, which I'm happy to announce in a moment or so. If I go to my job tomorrow, and I do a poor job, nice, true, shitty job. Guess what happens? I either get fired or I get, written up and put on probation. A lot of these judges, Dwayne Ford, though, he's a senior judge and he, teaches judging classes and this and that. And I'm like, Dwayne Ford boxes a lot of fucking decisions. I remember he boxed the first Hopkins Jermaine Taylor fight. He gave Taylor the last round when Hopkins is pummeling him across the ring. Had the guy bleeding all over the place. So Dwayne Ford boxes a lot of decisions. So a lot of these judges need to be held accountable, and it never happens. Now, another thing I think could potentially, help out the sport is not just the suspending of judges that are regularly giving poor performances. I'll tell you one that I remember from, and I'm going back 13 or 14 years, was Eugenia Williams. Eugenia Williams is one of the ones that scored the Holyfield Lewis first fight. Eugenia Williams became a punchline because Holyfield won no more than three rounds in that fight. And it wasn't like three other rounds were close or four other rounds were close. It was clearly Lewis by 9-3. And Holyfield 3 wasn't even that impressive. She gave Holyfield one round when he got outlanded something like a 20-6 or something. And she became a punchline. She called Eugene Williams. And then next thing you know, her next fight is a bad decision. I said, well, you see a pattern here. And I'll tell you one thing Dr. Koch told me about judging. He's like, a lot of times if he's judging and if a fight wasn't very good, you know, the Pacquiao-Bradley fight was okay. It wasn't great. The Lewis-Holyfield fight was not very exciting at all. Dr. Tosh would always say something along the lines like saying, hey, you know what? A lot of times, because I'm daydreaming. So I'm not saying I'm daydreaming. Because I watched about the last 30 seconds, and yeah, that's what I make up my mind. Well, I would never do that, but I can see why. Sometimes I watch fights on TV, and they're terrible. I'm surfing the internet or, you know, read the book and glancing up.
Yeah, but the whole difference, Tony, you're not getting paid to judge. Right?
Very true. Yeah. Very true.
These guys have an obligation, and I ain't going to buy no excuse. I mean, I can understand from our standpoint as fans, but your job, I mean, when I'm writing on anything, I'm right there. Even if the fight's boring, I mean, that's my job to do it.
Right. And the other thing I talked about when I made my suggestions is the angle of the view. I mean, they're looking up through the ropes at these fights. You know, maybe they should change the position so that they're looking over the rope somehow. Some way that they don't obstruct the view of everybody else. But, you know, they got to put these guys in position to see everything and not have to worry about, you know, ducking under or turning sideways to see under a rope. We could talk about boxing's bad decisions and judges forever. We have a couple other stories worth mentioning here. One of our former guests, Christy Martin, was in court the other day to face her ex-husband, Jim Martin. And she had some powerful words for him. She said, look at me, Jim, look at me. And then she said, from the beginning, I financially supported you, your family, and any and all of your significant others. How was I repaid for taking care of you all those years? And her answers were blackmail, an addiction to cocaine, and ultimately, you leaving me for dead on the bedroom floor. And the 68-year-old James Martin was sentenced to 25 years in prison on Tuesday on a charge of attempted second-degree murder with a firearm. And he was convicted in April.
What is the
age difference between them? Yeah, it's definitely a big difference.
He's
48,
he's what, no more than 45.
Right. I don't know the exact age offhand.
I'm going to be 36 and you're running out of 18
years. Yeah, you would
think that. Did I tell you that he was upset because she left him for another woman?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't seeing things.
Basically, you know, that was something that was going on for a long time because that was something that he held over her head. And this just came out in this report. I had never heard this before, but before the attack, her lover, Sherry Lusk, I guess. I think it's Sherry. Yeah, Sherry Jo Lusk testified. And she said that James Martin had controlled his wife's life for years with drugs and the threats to harm her or expose her sexuality to family and the professional boxing community. So that was like his leverage. That, not only that, but he repeatedly told me that if I ever left him, he would kill me, Christy said. He said he would say he didn't have much longer to live anyway. Then she talks about a cocaine addiction. So I guess he got her hooked on cocaine, too, and probably tried to, you know, rule over her with that situation. But James actually took the stand, Jim Martin, the husband, and actually had the balls to say he was the one who had been living in fear. And he said, outside the ring, I was scared of Christy because I didn't want to do anything to make her mad. Although he apologized several times during his testimony, he did not admit to either shooting or stabbing her. And he suggested, rather, that her injuries were suffered in a struggle, and both he and his ex-wife were responsible. And this is a new one. He said, we stabbed her. We. I didn't attack Christy. We stabbed her. What? And he basically called his ex-wife a hero and told the judge just before the sentence was handed down, I came here with God in my heart, and I'll leave with God in my heart. So it's basically a life sentence at his age, I guess, 25 years. So, you know, he'll be 100 if he gets out. If he does the full amount of time, he'll be almost 100. So.
That's the good news for any of my fans out there, my Titans Unlimited fans. It looks like the tornado will be going back to the
floor lighting. You got a preview piece coming up?
No, nothing immediately, preview-wise. But about a week or so ago, after the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, I was going to go back out there, and as I discussed with you, you maybe start examining some of history's worst decisions or fights that, you know, still are talked about. Hagler Leonard still talking about. I said that was one where Hagler gave away the first four rounds. So let's look at, and I want to just rate their level of, controversy, you know, how controversial they were. Whitaker Chavez, fight for that. And so I will have some more time to be doing that because I was able to negotiate my release from the company that I hate so much.
Oh. So
yeah.
You're a free agent?
Yeah, I am a free agent now, Rick. I am a free agent. So if that Zionist money ever comes through, you know, I can sit there and sign on the dotted line.
Nice.
They pulled a meeting on Monday, this past Monday, and everybody in the world knows I've been frustrated. I was actually threw one of my bosses out the window a few months ago and knocked off me. I called him a big baby Dewey and told him he better knock the fuck off. And I was not happy there, and I spoke to my boss on Friday and said, here are some of the things that have gone here that, you know, has made this place bad. And he said, we got to straighten the ship. I said, the ship is the Titanic, bro. I said, it's the Titanic. And we pulled it on Monday, and they were going to let somebody go. And they were obviously going to let the person go with the least amount of seniority, which is understandable. If this person produces the least, does the least, can be the biggest pain in the ass, even bigger pain in the ass than I am, which is hard to believe. But is overall a nice person, is very thorough, and is trying to succeed and is having some financial difficulties. They pulled the senior person into a meeting and said, you know, we're looking to let somebody go. We'll most likely be this person unless you are willing, you know, to accept the layoff. She said, no, I don't blame her. She's been there 8 years. She is supporting her boyfriend right now, who doesn't really work that much. So she needs it. They came to me and they said, you know, would you be willing? I said, yes. You would? I said, yeah. Why? I said, because I'm not happy here. I said, now you're going to let somebody go. I'm going to inherit most of their work. I'm going to get no extra money out of it. I'm already stressed out as it is. I'm not happy here. And I said, I'll tell you something right now. The two people sitting in that office out there are not job hunting. I am. I can be gone tomorrow, boys. I said, you let somebody else go. I can come in tomorrow and say, you know what? I'm gone. I got some other option. I'm going with. And they said, that was really, well, we were hoping you would say you wanted to stay and then you could let this other person go. And I said, no, I would prefer that I get the release. I'm going to get a couple weeks of payment. I'm going to get some paid benefits time. I'm going to get all my vacation out of you paid. And I collect unemployment. I'm going to be doing better than if I stayed there. I'm going to have time to devote to my under-the-table personal training. I'm going to have time to devote to some writing projects that I want to do for Fight News Unlimited and some writing projects that I want to do to send to some outdoor magazines like, you know, Outdoor Life and Field and Stream. So I do some hunting, and I had a pretty good story that I've been so burnt out mentally that I've never had a chance to finish. I can, you know, dedicate some work to under-the-table time, under-the-table work, and I can be a lot happier. So, Rich, your number one ace is back. Yeah.
Out of the bullpen.
Right. Your number one ace is back.
All right.
He's going to get me more than 2 hours a week now.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so on that note, we actually have a guest tonight. I know I haven't properly introduced him, but we have an MMA guy, he's an up-and-comer. in the sport of MMA. And it's, hold on, wait for it. He's 11-1, and his name is Chris Grutzenmacher, or Grutzenmacher. I probably mispronounced that, but we'll get it straight from the horse's mouth in a minute here. But I guess his nickname is Groots. Well, I had him up. And while we're waiting for him to connect, another story came through here that the foul pole, Andrew Bulata, might be deported back to Poland. Details on that later, but it's another story I saw this week. Not only does he foul in the ring, he fouls the laws up, I guess. I don't think we got the right number here for Chris.
Hello?
Chris?
Hello?
Hello, Chris. Hey, you're live on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. How's it going tonight?
Oh, it's pretty good, man. Pretty good.
And you're on with myself, Rich, and we have Tom and Tony also on the line.
Hello,
Chris. Right on. What's going on?
Well, how's it going? You got another fight coming up? I know you just came off a big fight, right?
Yeah, I did, actually. I got nothing lined up right now, man. I'm just trying to enjoy life and just get back in the, well, I'm already back in the gym training and stuff. Actually, just got done training with the fight team about an hour ago. So I'm just kind of hanging out, just watching people now.
Cool. And how did you first get into fighting?
Really just trying to get in shape, man. I never wanted to be, like, I wanted to be competitive. Like, I wanted to start doing jiu-jitsu, so that's really what I was looking for. But, you know, it's really, really more than anything, it was just trying to get back into shape, dude. I was just super heavy, and I just lifted weights and kind of a, you know, it wasn't fulfilling enough, man. I just wanted to get back in shape and compete and roll around and just be in shape, man. And I just started training as a fighter, man. I started doing kickboxing and just started, you know, training with strength and conditioning coach they had here. And then the fight team eventually was created at this gym. And I was like, well, they're wrestling. I was like, I like this. And I used to wrestle. I go in there and wrestle. And I had some jiu-jitsu experience. So I figured it could help out. And this kid just kept kind of rolling along, man. Eventually, just, I was doing it so much. It was kind of, are you going to do this or you just try it? And that's kind of what it was, man.
And where are you located?
Glendale, Arizona.
Oh, cool. So you're in Jackson Camp territory, right?
Southwest, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the scene like out there as far as opportunities to fight and everything?
Here, I mean, there's a local circuit called Rage in the Cage here, and it's, you know, if you need to get your some amateur fights and stuff here, but it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's Phoenix. Glendale is a suburb of Phoenix, and Phoenix has got a couple big cities around it, like connected to it, Scottsdale, Peoria, Glendale, Mesa, Chandler, Gilbert, and the city's still kind of growing itself. But so there's lots of fighters. It's weird. Like, Arizona's saturated with fighters. I mean, it seems like there's a, you know, they come from all over the place. Like, a lot of the card, and they're in the cage, and they'll be like, sometimes 23, 24 fights that are supposed to be scheduled, man. So it's weird. And now they'll have like a fight every month almost. They've got many of that many guys. But and there's some, a couple other shows kind of popping up here in Arizona. But it's kind of a weird scene out here, man. I don't know if nobody, there's no local scene here where anybody's making any super great money. So.
Right. And what's your ultimate goal with the sport?
It's kind of changed, man. Originally, I just wanted to, the original goal was always kind of the same, but I kind of added some goals to it, because I didn't really come in here to be a fighter. I just learn martial arts, man. I just want to learn jiu-jitsu originally. But now, the UFC is the immediate goal, man. I want to be in the UFC. I want to know what I can do. I want to go off test the waters and try, see as far as, the way I work, I want to know how far I can go, you know, and if I whatever happens, you know, if we got to change things up to see if I can keep continuing to go farther. But I want to get in there and go as far as I can go. And if that means, you know, one fight and that's it, well, I mean, that's sad. But, I mean, it is what it is. But if that means, you know, world championship, let's do it too, man. So I just want to go out there and just be the best I can be, man.
So have you tried out for the Ultimate Fighter yet or anything like that?
I did it twice, actually.
Oh.
First time I didn't make it past the grappling section, and then the next part I made it all the way through, but you know, they have the interview part, and you know, I don't know, I just sat down, and there's a bunch of guys in a circle, and I guess you're supposed to entertain them, you know. I didn't know what to expect, and so I sat down for all of like 10 seconds. Like, all right, man, let's talk to you. I'm like, this is it? I left the room thinking, those motherfuckers, I should do that. Maybe they would put me on the show, man. But I watched.
Yeah,
now thinking, what do we do here now?
For a while there was a lot of talk about how, you know, are they looking for more entertaining people or good fighters? I don't know if it's still that way, but I do remember there being a lot of people that were pissed off about the way that they were emphasizing, you know, the fact that you had to entertain people to get on the show. But I never heard that story. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I've gone through it twice, and both experiences were kind of weird. I don't know, man. If that's the way I have to get in on the show, that'd be cool, man. But at this point, man, I'd rather just, like, that's kind of, everybody thinks that's the easy way, or not the easy way, but that's the, you get, I mean, automatically because of the show, you get fans, and then on top of that, too, you know, the sponsorships you get are pretty good out of that gate, and everything that's kind of like the golden ticket, the fast track, you make it on there, just dip away. But I'm okay with it, man. If I don't make it that way, that's fine with me. I'll do it with the old-fashioned way, just hard work, you know?
Well, you know, with all the injuries that they're having, I think they've gotten the message that they have to do an influx of recruiting. They definitely have to step up their game, bringing in new guys at this point.
Well, I'm hoping. It seems weird to say, like, I'm crossing my fingers to hope somebody gets hurt, but you know, I just want my chance, man. That's really all I want. I just want to know what I can do, man. I mean, in my world, I don't know what I am in a big grand scheme. I don't know where I'm at. I want to know where I'm at, you know. And once I'm there, you know, I want to change what I got to do and then get better, you know. Like, that's it. I just want to be better. I just want to be better every day. That's really all it gets down to. That's the goal. I just want to be better every day. And I want to be able to make a living at this. And the only place you can do that is in the UFC. So.
And who would you say has been the toughest guy you faced so far?
It depends, man. It depends how you're talking about it, man. This last fight was pretty tough, just because there was so much that went wrong, you know, like between the cut, just being mentally ready for this fight, and, you know, like, first round didn't quite go the way I wanted it to go. But I've had some of the earlier fights in my career were pretty tough, because I was just, I was like all emotions, man. Just raw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to say, but I mean, if I had to put something, I'd probably say this last fight was pretty tough, man. I'd say that the last one was probably my toughest.
And you have anybody out there you really want to fight next?
whoever gets me in the UFC, man. Whoever that is, whoever. I don't care who it is. Whoever gets me in the UFC.
Right.
That's a pretty good answer, Chris. Chris, I have a question for you. How has your strength and conditioning program evolved since you first got into everything and started training?
Well, we don't really teach people how to become MMA fighters here at the gym. You know, like the fight team does their MMA thing. But as far as actual, like, we've got like 700 students here. And we have a competitive jiu-jitsu team here that just does jiu-jitsu. We have stand-up classes, and we've had guys go to smokers, and we've had some in-house smokers share ourselves. So, you know, we have a group of guys who are pretty competitive as far as doing kickboxing or boxing here on the amateur level. And then, you know, like we have just a, like a fitness program. We're a gym, you know, so we have a fitness program and our strength and conditioning coach, you know. So originally I just teach you these like CrossFit cardio classes. And then I just was coming in like a savage, you know, every day just doing it. So he asked me, he's like, you know, you should be lifting weights, man. Like, this is good. Like, you know, like, you could go run and lift weights, get enough cardio between the kickboxing and the jiu-jitsu, go lift some weights. So he had a little program, and I just followed it, man. It kind of involves different things. Like, it's not like a, like we do see, like, at an LA Fitness or a Bally, you know, like, you're jumping over boxes and trying to, you know, explode. So it's, you know, core stabilization stuff, and you're trying to keep your balance and, you know, move much other parts of your body. And, you know, and it's some of the same stuff, you know, power cleans, you know, squats, bench press. But, I mean, as far as the strength and conditioning go here, it changes. Sometimes you're, like, in more of an explosive phase, more of, like, your own body weight, endurance phase. Sometimes you're in a strengthening phase. Sometimes it's all, like, power movements. You know, you're cleaning a lot, deadlifts, all that stuff. So it changes.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend, that you don't want it to get boring, and you want to just keep challenging your body in different ways. But, yeah, it sounds like that's cutting edge. Great.
I think for any, like, athletic program, you know, like, you're going to get stronger, get bigger, get faster, you know, eventually your body's going to adapt to what you're doing, so you got to mix it up. So as far as even progressing as an athlete, it's good, but definitely you're right on the top, man, because and sometimes lifting weights, it gets boring, man. Just, you know.
Yeah.
So it's cool to mix it up and be able to use, you know, the medicine balls and stability balls and, you know,
sure,
all that stuff and do the athletic stuff and be fun. It's fun.
And what would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Most important thing I do?
Right.
I don't know, man. There's a lot. Getting ready for a fight, there's a whole list of things, man. I mean, I would say the most important thing for me is to eliminate all distractions, man, to be honest. I don't, when I am in camp, man, I live like a honk. I don't go out. I don't drink. Like, I don't really drink anyways, but, like, I don't even, like, I like to go out and dance and hang out with the boys and talk shit, but, like, I won't even do that. Like, I don't go out. I watch, stay home, watch movies. I go to bed at midnight, you know, wake up at 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, make sure I get, you know, 8 to 9 hours of sleep every single night, you know. I have all my meals planned out. I have what I'm going to work out, what I'm going to do. Everything's regimented. Everything's scheduled out, you know. So it's really important just for me to be on my schedule, I guess, and eliminate all distractions.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people don't think of just how many little things go into your preparation and how disciplined fighters have to be. You know, a lot of sports, when you're done, but, you know, here, my God, you know, it looks easy. No one trains harder than a fighter getting ready for a fight. I mean, and no one works harder.
It's funny, man. The thing is about, and it's hard to, the nature of the beast, but the sport itself, the nature of it, is just different, you know. Like, if you're an active, competitive fighter, you know, and you're trying to get better, and you're trying to, you know, like, about 3 fights a year is, you know, 3 to 4. I think even more after that, you know, like, you're not really having, you don't really have enough. There's only so much time in a year. There's only so many hours you can train every day, and there's no off season. So it's, you know, like already, I had my fight. I was back in the gym. I wasn't killing it, but, you know, about an hour workout, you know. And then this week's come back in, you know, not every day's been a 2-a-day yet, but, you know, by the time next week starts, I should be back right into 2-a-days, you know. So, I mean, I don't really take any actual time off. I'm never not doing something, you know, never, you know, not training. So it's just different, man.
Well, I think that's the attitude you have to have, because your competition's not taking time off either. And, you know, the old cliche, Chris, that there's a lot of things you can't control. I mean, you can't control your opponent's training or strategy, but you can control the way you prepare. That's 100% in your control. So it sounds like sounds like you've really got the right mental attitude.
So, I mean, you know, we kind of have a thing, hard camp equals an easy fight. You know, if you have an easy camp, you're going to have a hard fight. So I guess I kind of relate to the same thing. You know, your preparation in your camp is going to be a very big portion of your success. I mean, anybody can flip on a banana peel, anybody, but,
sure.
You know, if you did the work, you know, the wins and losses sort of separate themselves, you know.
Right. Now, is there anybody out there that you watch a lot of, you consider an idol in the sport or anything like that?
You know, I mean, people who I enjoy watching, you know, but to be honest, man, like, I like watching all fights. And I like watching, I mean, I watch boxing, I watch, you know, I'm excited for the Olympic trials that are going on, so some of the combat sports stuff that's going to be going on. You know, I like watching, because to me, there's just, everybody talks about skill set, but when you get into some of this stuff, man, there's head games going on, there's people, you know, doing things to mess with you in your mind, and you can watch. It's kind of cool to, you know, if you're watching that stuff, it's kind of cool to see it. So, I mean, I'm a fan of just anything that will people get after, anybody who are trying to, you know, do it. But I'm a big fan of the Cesar Gracie camp, man. I like watching all their fighters fight. Those guys bring it. They're not afraid to fight. They put their heart out there. So I like watching those guys. I'm a big fan of actually a man fan. I like watching Man fan, to be honest. And Kenny Florian is a guy. You know, it didn't matter who he was and whether I thought he was going to be a good fighter or not. I'd like to see what he does all the time. I always think he's an educated fighter. I think he's pretty articulate with what he does. So I think he's very thoughtful in how he fights. You know, I guess I like guys who seem like they can talk about their fight. They can talk about what they're doing. They can articulate how they did it, why they did it, what they were feeling. They can talk so much about just the moment in the fight because, you know, they're in it. They're thinking. You know, I think to me, fighting is a thinking man sport. Anybody who thinks any different, to me, is foolish because, you know, you got to be kind of in tune with your body, how your body's going to move, and then how your strategy, you know, what you're doing. And if you're fighting somebody, know everybody's different. So on the spot, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to win, you know? So I definitely think fighting is a thinking person sport.
Oh, yeah, and it's very hard to do when you're under the pressure of a fight. I mean, it's easy to sit back when you're not in there and say, oh, yeah, well, you should do this. But when you're out there, you've got a split second, and one bad mistake, and it's over with. And the pressure is,
sure.
You know, so you've got to just try to think ahead, but then you can't outthink yourself either. It's like a fine line there. You got to be using your brain, but don't think too much. That's why you train, to just react. But, yeah, for sure,
definitely.
The strategy,
I'm
the tactics, yeah.
I'm definitely a big believer in, you got to have balance, man. You can't be, I mean, for other people, I should know it's easy, but for myself personally, man, I mean, not just in fighting, but like in just my life, I'm kind of an extreme person, man. I'm not on one end of it, I'm on the other, so I'm constantly just trying to be centered, you know?
Yeah.
So I totally agree, though. You got to think, but you can, you know, it's like, I don't know if you've seen that movie, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and he's like, you're not doing enough. Okay, you got to do a little more.
Yeah, now you're doing too much. Well, and then of course with the game plan, you know, you need a plan B and maybe a plan C, but then you can't get too overboard there either. You know, by the time you get to plan G and H, it's probably over with. So,
you know, I kind of think like when people talk about their game plans, you know, what they're game planning, like. It's weird, you know. I don't know. Because sometimes you hear guys talk about what the game plan is, or what this is, or what that is, you know. And then I think when it gets down to it, man, either, you know, your skill, your game plan shouldn't be like a whole strategic. Like your game plan should be simple, and you should have a couple simple game plans. Because if you're not, if you're the strategic, oh, then we're gonna grab this, and then when you do, you know, like how are you gonna play by play somebody's reaction? You can't do it, especially if you don't never seen it, never gonna do it. So it gets down. I mean, game plans are simple and small, and if you're just not better than that person, you're gonna lose. It is what it is.
I think that's a very good point. And going back to the old days, I don't know, Chris, if you're much of an historian at the UFC, but there was a guy, Steve Jenham, back in the real old days, but he gave an interview once that was pretty revealing. Like he said that this style of fighting is not really conducive to having a rigid game plan, like assuming you go out and, okay, well, I want to just make this a boxing match, and all of a sudden your opponent shoots in and you're on your back. Well, that changes the whole equation, you know, or the other way around. I want to do it on the ground, but if your takedowns are getting stuffed, well, your stand-up game better be where it needs to be, you know, so you just have to be flexible.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think if anybody's thinking in the mindset, like, well, I'm going to use my wrestling, like, I think if you're still in the mindset of, well, I'm a wrestler, you know, like, I hear this all the time, man, and it seems funny to me, but, like, I hear promoters, you know, or in a different fight venues, you know, they're like, and this fighter, his style, he's a wrestler, like, like, they still talk about what style somebody is. And I'm thinking to myself, like if you're so good that you can say, this is how I fight. I'm straight up just this, and I'm a bad mamma jamma. Then that's pretty sick. But it kind of seems like at this point, everybody's a mixed martial artist. Everybody, you know, kind of does a little bit of everything, you know. Right, like, that is, are you the best wrestler? It's more like, is your wrestling good enough, you know? And it's just weird because sometimes that plays into who you're fighting, you know. So it's kind of weird when people say their style. And it's coming out of the red corner. This style is, he's a Taekwondo Street Fighter expert, you know.
Yeah, I think when you hear stuff like that, that's very 1998-ish, you know.
Yeah.
I have a category called Thug Jitsu. But I've heard it. I think in Strikeforce was the last time I heard it. Back, forget, I want to say Charles something.
I'm watching some of the old Japanese, because you see those dudes fighting MMA style, but they're like, they got their gi on still, but they don't have the shorts on. They're not wearing the pants, but they still got their gi top on. Yeah, I love watching some of those fights.
Yeah, it's come a long way. But as far as you know, your experience with the sport, you've been through a lot of different promotions so far. Obviously, you got a pretty decent record at 11-1. What's the money situation like? Have you seen your paychecks go up a lot since you first started? Is it enough to get by? What is that?
I just barely started, like, kind of being able to take care of myself just in these last two fights now. Without the support of the gym and doing private care at the gym and at different occasions, you know, holding a part-time job, you know, within anywhere from like 30 to 20 hours, you know, and doing, I teach kids classes here as well. I struggle, man. I survived it. I mean, I'd say the first 3 years, man, like, I was paying to do this, to win a fight, and all it would do was just, like, it was almost like if the fights were planned perfect. Like, somebody out there was just looking out for me to make sure I could just get by, because I don't know, I'd win a fight, make $500, and it would just be enough so that my car didn't get towed. I could turn my phone back on, and I could, you know, pay some friends back money that I borrowed, you know. And just recently, man, I've been able to just stand on my own 2 feet and just be able to breathe and not worry that, you know, something's going to fall apart and I won't have anything. Like, I won't be able to do anything, you know. There was a time, man, I didn't pay my car for a year. You know, when I did, I didn't have insurance on it. I was just making the payments, and, you know, like, I drove without insurance for the longest time. I only drove to work, man. I was super scared, man. Scared that, like, you know, I'm gonna get pulled over, and this is all gonna be over, you know. It wasn't like I was messing around. I was trying to just go to work.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to improve, the pay situation. I think I always try to ask that question because, you know, the UFC is one of those organizations that is obviously considered the top dog, and they set the pace. And you know, I think they've really dropped the ball with, you know, what they pay people. And they try to justify it by saying, well, when you're a UFC fighter, you got all these sponsorships. But, I mean, they even tax those with the, you know, you got to.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, I made some money, and like, really, to be honest, man, the way I made this allows me just to do this more professionally. That's all it's done. But, you know, like, it isn't secured any type of lifestyle for me. It hasn't secured anything for me other than the fact that I can do this tomorrow and I can do it better than I've been doing it the last 2 years. So I'm kind of right now taking the money I got and just I'm putting it back into myself and investing in myself to hopefully that I make it to the UFC and I'll make that. You know, I don't want to have big money, but like I'm humble, man. I don't want Ferraris and I don't want big houses. I mean, I want that kind of money, but not for me. Like, I don't care about any of that stuff. I just want to make sure that you know, I want family. I want a kid someday. I want, you know, like, but I want to be able to give that little child of mine everything I never have. You know, like for me, this is finding a way out of poverty. To be honest, like I'm just tired of having to scrape by, man. Nobody, like I'm blessed to have like all the fun stuff I get to do. Or I get to be a grown kid. I mean, this is rough work sometimes, man. But at the end of the day, man, I couldn't find myself doing anything else. But I just want to be able to have a future after this and be able to, you know, have a family and take care of stuff. Present things, you know?
Yeah, it's always important.
Well, remember, Crystal, all it takes is one good fight and you got your opportunity and things can change very quick for you, you know?
I believe you. I dream about it all the time, man. I dream about it all the time, bro.
I have dreams sometimes that I ended up on the Ultimate Fighter show. I mean, I had boxing and wrestling, and I never tried MMA, but I always thought, you know, if it had come along at the right time, maybe a few years earlier, it had gotten popular. Because I had a national championship in boxing in 98, and I was a pretty good wrestler. I only wrestled 3 years in high school, but I guess my big claim to fame is I won the JV States my first year. And I had to wrestle about 20 pounds over my weight class my senior year, or else I probably would have gone to the sectionals and won the sectionals. I never put it together into MMA because when I got out of college and got out of boxing, it was about 1999, and it really hadn't exploded yet. And it really, the first time I even started watching it was 2006. It was really a banner year for MMA because that was the first year that Elite XC was on Showtime. That's my first card watched on TV.
I think I was a junior, and I remember the whole wrestling team was like talking about the Ultimate Fighter. I didn't even know what the Ultimate Fighter was until the second season.
Yeah,
and I remember everybody talking about the first season, and then we were talking about Diego Sanchez and all these names. I've seen the old, you know, pay-per-views and everything, but like I could have convinced it in my mind. One of the first, like I sat down, like I was excited for this. It was Nick Diaz was fought Diego Sanchez, man. I was fired up, man. I thought that was, I watched those two dudes fight. I was like, man, that's what a fight. That, there you go. That's it right there. You know, I was juiced. I was jacked, man.
Well, it's definitely a good goal to have to end up in the UFC, and definitely wish you the best of luck with that one. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank or say hello to out there?
I gotta say just again, man, the MMA Lab, all my coaches, John Krause, Nico Fernandez, Joe Lohner, all my teammates, Al, Ben, Efren, Yachty, Victor, Kelly, Jamie, Joe, I want to miss some hands. Our team's gotten quite a bit bigger in the last year. I might be missing some names, but my mom, and she supported me, you know, single mother. She supported my whole life and continues to support me in this. So, man, you know, it's awesome. And then Apex Sports Agency, and those guys have been, I mean, really honest anyway, the part of it, the last two fights is one of the first fights that actually made some money. So, man, like I'm pretty happy with those guys right now. So,
cool.
But other than that, man, I mean, there's tons of people I could list off, man, and I still wouldn't have enough time to name everybody.
That's okay. I'm sure they know you're thinking of them. And we definitely appreciate having you on. We we'll keep an eye out on you, and we'll have you on the show when you're a UFC fighter.
Definitely. I'll hold you to that.
All right,
Chris. Just keep working hard. Best of luck.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
So as I was saying before we talked to Chris, the foul pole, Andrew Golota, could be deported from the United States to his native Poland. He's 43 years old, retired, and his wife, Mariola Golota, told the Chicago Tribune that a decision on this is expected in September. And, of course, this guy is famous for the low blows, to the point where he actually nicknamed himself the foul pole.
Well, what is the issue? What's the issue about the deportation?
Well, here it is. He pleaded guilty in a 2006 Cook County case involving a dozen firearms found in his home. Golota's firearm owner's identification card was temporarily revoked at the time, and he also pleaded guilty in Will County in 2003 to impersonating a police officer. He was accused of flashing an honorary New Jersey police badge when he was pulled over to the Chicago suburbs.
Oh, for some reason, he's just a laugh button with me, you know. It's just something about that guy. And so he has all these guns in his house, and I know Illinois has pretty strong laws on that. But the question is, what were the police doing in his house in the first place? Oh, wow. I mean, it's a rhetorical question. I'm sure you probably don't know the answer to it, but, you know, you just got to wonder. Yeah.
I mean,
you'd have to think if you have guns in your house you're not supposed to, the last thing in the world you need is the police coming there.
Right.
But there's a story behind that, too. You know, that's the fascinating thing about Golota.
He was probably shooting something in the nuts. This is another funny thing. He's actually appeared in a commercial for the U.S. Census Bureau, and now they're throwing him out of the country.
Is it for sure that he's going, or have they made a final decision on it?
There's a decision in September. That's the final decision.
Okay, so he still has a chance. Well, maybe we can make a comeback.
We'll start the petition, right?
Okay, I'm signing. You know, he's one of, there's an old cliche about certain people, if they're fighting, I'm watching, and he was always in that category.
Yeah, he was actually a pretty decent fighter, believe it or not.
Both bow fights. I mean, I found myself screaming at the television, forget that he has a body. Hit him in the head.
You have to look at that fight and go, he has to be doing this on purpose. He doesn't want to fight anymore. There's no other explanation for it. So it's not at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the sad thing is, he was doing so good in the fights. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but
just a psychic, right? But actually, there's a fight tonight. A couple heavyweight titles got claimed in a heavyweight fight over in Macau. So I'm just looking at BoxRec here, but this is just kind of a funny way to drive home the point that there are too many belts in boxing. And we talked about this with Iceman John Scully once. But here we have a 12-rounder heavyweight fight for the WBO China Zone heavyweight title and the WBO Asia Pacific heavyweight title. And the winner was a guy named Chauncey Welliver, who was 53-5-5 with 20 knockouts. And couldn't have a more white-sounding name.
Yes.
And he beat Sherman Williams, who was another American, 34-11 with two draws, famous for fighting Holyfield to a no contest. One of his most recent fights, I guess. But he lost. Doesn't show a decision or what, but just as a loss. Must have been some kind of a decision. But that was tonight over in Macau. And we got a couple other fights here coming up. We got a big Friday Night Fights card tomorrow. But over in Providence, Rhode Island, south of here, we got Jason Big Six Estrada, main event heavyweight fight against Alex Gonzalez. Estrada's 18-4 with 5 knockouts. Gonzalez is 20-6, 10 knockouts. What was that, Tony?
Never stand out the way they thought he would.
Yeah. And ESPN2, Friday Night Fights. We have, yesterday we on Russia TV, too. Yeah. But from Corona, California, we have a light welterweight main event there between Ruslan Provodnikov, who's 21-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Jose Reynoso, 16-3-1 with 3 knockouts. And I got a couple complimentary bouts to add to the list there. We got 8-rounder super bantamweights, Roberto Castaneda, who's 20 wins, 1 loss and 1 draw, 15 knockouts, fighting Christopher Martin, who's 26-2-3 with 6 knockouts. And a 6-round welterweight fight between Deshaun Johnson, 13-5-3, and Angel Asuna, who's 7-3-1. And also, I forgot to mention on that Providence card, former guest of ours from years ago, I want to say now, Toka Khan Clary. We interviewed him when he was an amateur. He's making his pro debut against Jonathan Caban, who's 0-2. And he was trained by Peter Manfredo Sr. at the time. We had them both on the show a while back. But good luck to him in his pro debut there, for sure. And of course, we go to Saturday. We got a big showbox card on Saturday. We also have the Mexican female flyweight title on the line in Mexico between Maribel Ramirez, who's 4-3 with 1 draw, and Delia Lopez, who's 8-2 with 2 draws. So they're throwing titles to everybody there, I guess. It's vacant. It's a vacant Mexico female flyweight title. It's a surprise. Wow. I don't think anything's vacant in Mexico. but we got another fight in Mexico worth mentioning for the vacant IBF International Middleweight title. Marco Antonio Rubio, 53-6-1 with 46 knockouts, fighting Jorge Cota, who's 12-0 with 11 knockouts. And also the IBF female minimum weight titles on the line on that card. Katia Gutierrez, 16-3 with 4 knockouts, fighting Susana Cruz Perez, who's 11-4 with 6 knockouts. And interesting light welterweight fight between Roberto Ortiz, who's undefeated, 24-0 with 1 draw, fighting Abraham Gomez, who's 18-5-1. Let's see what else we got. Trying to find the Saturday card here somewhere. There it is. Cornelius Bundridge fighting Corey Spinks on Showtime Saturday for the IBF light middleweight title. And Bundridge, of course, famous for the fighting on what's that show? Yeah, it's been off the air so long I've forgotten what it's called. Cornelius Bundridge, 31-4 with 18 knockouts, fighting Corey Spinks, who's 39-6 with 11 knockouts. And I haven't even really heard any news about Corey Spinks in a long time. I don't know what happened to him, how he dropped off the radar, but he last fought Sessu Powell in January, and he won a unanimous decision. And Sessu was 26-3 going into that fight. And actually, this is a rematch with Cornelius Bundridge. So they fought back in August of 2010, Bundridge beat him by technical knockout in the fifth round. And that was for the IBF light middleweight title. So it's interesting. And what happened was Spinks was coming off a win against DeAndre Lattimore, where he got that title. And then Bundridge took it away from him the next fight. And he had two losses before that. So three of his six losses were from 2007 till now. And then before that, he lost to Zab Judah, Michelle Piccirillo, and Antonio Diaz early in his career. And he, Antonio Diaz, 25-2 when he fought him. He fought a bunch of bums up until then. He actually fought a guy who was 44, had 44 wins, 186 losses, 12 draws. Reggie Strickland.
Whoa. Now you wonder where the commission's at there, huh?
Wow. I remember they had an article, and I'm going back about 13, 15 years ago, and I'll never forget it. It was the Strickland cousins, Reggie and Jerry. And they had a picture of them together, like, yeah, you want to pad your record? It was in Ring Magazine. Try to get a fight with one of the Strickland cousins, Reggie and Jerry. And they had like a combined record, which is something like 40 and like 300 and something. And they're like, but be careful of Reggie. He had the audacity of winning like 3 of his last 10 fights or something, or something ridiculous like that.
His last win was actually against an undefeated fighter, Tyrone Roberts, with 6-0. He beat him back in 2004.
Wow.
And he had a draw with another guy who was undefeated at 6-0, Jimmy Holmes. He beat a guy who was 1-13.
You know, when those losses get into triple digits, though, wouldn't you be asking yourself, am I in the right business?
Yeah. Well, this is his final tally. He retired, I guess, in 2005. His final totals were 66 wins, 276 losses, and 17 draws. Rounds boxed, 2,031. KO percentage, 3.86.
You know, back in the 80s, they had this group called the Philadelphia Death Squad. You guys ever hear about them? And they would move them from state to state, and they'd fight under different names the next week. And, you know, it sounds like he'd have been a candidate for that if he was fighting back then. Wow.
Also on that.
I was kind of young back then, so I don't remember that. One fighter I do remember, and he actually got previewed, profiled on USA Season Night Fights a couple times in the 90s, was a guy by the name of Buck Smith. And Buck Smith, you know, he fought on that Midwestern circuit, you know. Whenever he stepped up his competition at all, you know, he would always get beat. But, I mean, he would go, and he would fight, like, sometimes in like, small towns in, like, Alabama and Louisiana and all that. He'd fight up to 3 times a day. He'd go out there, you know, fight in, like, an afternoon card, jump in his car, drive somewhere else, fight there, and then go and then fight somewhere at night, all in that, like, circuit. And he had, like, 200, 300 and some fights. But a lot of them, he's fighting like this, like he might get a guy, and we'll say, you know, Reggie Strickland, who is like whatever and whatever, you know, he might fight that guy like 5 times, you know, he might fight him 2 times in one day. I remember other times where guys were like, quote unquote, fighting like their cousins. They were going around the loop and like fighting their cousin in like 3 or 4 different fight cards.
Well, we have a couple of things worth mentioning on that Showtime card, too. Arislandi Lara back in action. He's 16-1-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting at light middleweight. Fighting Freddie Hernandez, who's got 30 wins, 2 losses, and 20 knockouts. And we got featherweights.
Now that it looks like Canelo Alvarez is going to fight Paul Williams.
Was just in a car accident too.
Oh, really?
He's not fighting him either.
James Parker Matt fell through, I guess, it's injury reason. Then he was going to fight Ortiz loses and gets beat and breaks his jaw. You know what Lara said? Lara said, you know what? Call me.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people calling out Canelo. We'll see what happens. I mean, I thought the specific reason why they set up Shane Mosley with him was because Floyd was putting him through a job interview. But that doesn't appear to be possible now, you know, at least for his next fight. But we'll see. Also on that card, Gary Russell Jr. is undefeated at 19-0, a featherweight, fighting Christopher Perez, who's 23-2 with 14 knockouts. And we're running out of time, so of course we've got to thank our sponsors, Milifidel, MILIFIDEL.com, at Milifidel on Twitter, and also DrinkCocaine.com, drink energy drink, not the illegal substance. And thanks for stopping by, everybody. We'll be back next week with another guest or two. And thanks, guys, for a good show.
All right, guys. We'll look forward to it.
Adios.